Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's Ben Greenfield. I'm still in the Bahamas, and I decided to bring to you a interview with a guy who I've interviewed before who came back on the show. This guy I interviewed about how to biohack your smoothie. He knows a lot more than that. You're going to dig today's episode.
So I have this stuff in the pantry that my wife seems to be addicted to. It's this powder. She found it there. It must have arrived when I was gone traveling, and she's now been using it to sleep. And then I started using it to sleep and to relax, even to nap. It's L-theanine, GABA, and over 70 trace minerals, along with a special form of chelated magnesium called magnesium threonate, which is the only form of magnesium known to penetrate the blood-brain barrier. And the name of this stuff is called Mellow, M-E-L-L-O. It's made by Ned. And when I picked up the bag, I thought it was just magnesium. I didn't understand why my wife was flipping out about how amazing it was. Then I looked at the label and I was like, oh, this is way better than magnesium. Three forms of chelated magnesium, actually. GABA, L-theanine, amino acids, and over 70 trace minerals. Over 5,000 five-star reviews. They share all their third-party lab reports, so the stuff is clean. And you get 15% off anything from Ned, N-E-D, Ned. So you can become the best version of yourself. Go to helloned.com/Greenfield or enter code Greenfield at checkout. That's HELLONED.com/Greenfield to get 15% off. All right, folks. Well, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break a bad habit than quitting that bad habit, cold turkey. I'm not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor standing on a nail bed or something like that. I'm talking about this thing called Fume. This little thing called Fume holds a hallowed place in my fanny pack, actually. I've been hitting up the maple pepper core in that thing quite a bit. So anyways, the Fume is not a vape. It's a flavored air device. You breathe natural flavors through it. Like I said, I got the maple pepper core loaded up in mine right now. Turns out black pepper really hits the spot, so I can feel satisfied without breathing in or chewing on anything bad. It's amazing. I've got another one called the crisp mint core, so I can breathe in mint flavored air rather than a pen infused with something else. You know what I mean? That kind of bad habit that isn't good for you. Instead, you just basically use this pen, and it is an essential oil pen. It's amazing. A flavored air device. You get the taste sensation and the fidget and that hand-to-mouth action, but you don't have to feel guilty about the habit. It's a good habit to have. They have a whole bunch of natural, delicious flavors. It's not a vape. Don't get me wrong. It's a natural air device. It's fully legal. It doesn't have anything bad in it. I even use it on an airplane. I get a few funny looks with people who think I'm vaping on an airplane, even though I'm not. It's just basically flavored air, and it tastes great. I found it made my cravings go out the window. It's weird. It's a crazy life hack, but it works, and it's super sexy and cool looking too. So it's called Fume, F-U-M. You can get 10% off this thing if you go to tryfume.com, tryfume.com. Use code Ben to save 10%. So you can accelerate humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up what's called their Journey Pack today. It has a whole bunch of cool flavors, including that crisp mint core and the maple pepper core, two of my favorites. So again, tryfume.com/Ben and use code Ben to save 10% off your order from Fume, F-U-M. All right, folks, you may have heard the recent podcast episode I recorded with this cat who designed a drink. His name is Zach Abbott. He designed a drink that you throw back, it's a little shot, and it digests the toxic byproducts of alcohol for you, meaning that you feel great the next day after you've been drinking. And while I only endorse holiday responsible drinking and responsible drinking in general, it is nice to know you can maybe sneak in an extra cocktail or a glass of wine just because that holiday party is so freaking long and there's nothing to do but drink. So you throw back a shot of this stuff and it basically digests acetaldehyde for you, which is the chemical unwanted byproduct of alcohol. And so what they've done is they've bioengineered this probiotic to do that for you. And it works amazingly. You feel great the next day. It's very, very simple. You get a box of this stuff. You throw back a shot of it before you drink. Or if you forget, sometimes people are forgetful and you remember halfway through the party, you just throw it back then. And here's the deal. They've got steep discounts going on. You go to ZBiotics, called ZBiotics, ZBiotics, ZBiotics if you're in Europe. ZBiotics.com/Ben. ZBiotics.com/Ben. You get 15% off your first order when you use code Ben at checkout. 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason because you had 8 glasses of wine and you woke up the next morning and you weren't feeling that great, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. But please don't have 8 glasses of wine. So you go to ZBiotics.com/Ben. Use code Ben at checkout for 15% off. You got to try this stuff. Everybody I've told about ZBiotics, they have literally come back and said, dude, I had no clue. I was skeptical first. I was skeptical myself, but it actually works. Very interesting. So zbiotics.com/Ben.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
The ascorbic acid increases the reaction between polyphenol oxidase and polyphenols, so it doesn't allow the oxygen, which is coming in at tornado speed, to oxidize the antioxidant. It's a fantastic medication in psychiatry. It's the only psychotropic, or one of the only psychotropic medications used in psychiatry that doesn't have what's called a black box warning, but which is kind of synonymous with danger of death.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and a couple years ago, I actually released a podcast episode with a fellow named Dr. Richard Aiken, and the name of that podcast was How Blenders Can Destroy Food, Why I Eat 20 to 25 Servings of Vegetables Each Day, The Vegan Paleo Debate, and much more. And during that show, Dr. Aiken explained, among many other things, the potentially damaging effects of high-speed blending, which many of us do, including myself, on food, and even talked about an experiment he did on bananas to figure out how to create less damage to food when you blend it. And later on, I actually published an article kind of based off this banana experiment that Dr. Aiken did, and I'll link to that in the show notes for this episode. It's called How to Biohack Your Green Smoothie and Can High-Speed Blenders Really Damage Your Food? And I'm going to link to all this for you if you just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. Anyways, though, now, a couple of years later, Dr. Aiken is back. He just wrote a new book. It's called Neurodietetics, The Dietary Science of Human Flourishing. And Dr. Aiken is an MD. He's a PhD. He's a chemical engineer. He's a physician, obviously a pretty smart cookie. And this particular book kind of goes into how diet has a pretty profound influence on our minds and our brains, and how using food we can relieve suffering and reverse pathology, because he actually works with a lot of issues related to the brain and the mind, and has figured out how to use food to kind of like hack your head. That didn't quite come out sounding right. Hack your head is probably not quite as elegant a way to put it as much as hacking your mind, hacking your brain. Hacking your head sounds like something they would have done back in the medieval days. Anyways, though, Dr. Aiken, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks very much. It's great to be back again, Ben.
Yeah. Are you ready to talk some head hacking?
Head, mind, body, soul hacking. Let's do it.
All right, cool. So first of all, you call this book Neurodietetics. Did you make that word up, or is that a known term in the realm of psychiatry or psychology?
It's not a known term. I made it up. Now, that doesn't mean I made the rest of the book up, though. I have over 600 references, most from peer-reviewed individuals, and I wanted this to be a book that is kind of on the frontier of psychiatry that is based upon, not my opinion, but upon the very latest research in psychiatry and food and how to be all you can be from a cognitive behavioral standpoint.
Yeah, and you get into a lot of things in this book, a lot of things that we haven't even discussed on the show before. Like one concept I came across in the book in reading it, and of course, as with many of the books I read, you know, we've got a bunch of pages folded over in this thing. But one particular page I folded over that I found fascinating was the section that you have on xenohormesis, as in X-E-N-O, hormesis. And I've talked about hormesis before. You know, it's why I go and jump out in a cold pool in the morning, buck naked, or, you know, shine infrared light on my genitals, or do, you know, any other manner of things that cause slight damage but result in long-term positive results. You get into xenohormesis, though. What is xenohormesis exactly?
Well, I think the definition would be any kind of a phenomenon where a foreign organism, that is an organism foreign to yourself, in this case a human, that when that organism experiences a stress, that it can yield some hormonal or some kind of chemical effect that can benefit other different organisms. So in this case, I'm speaking of plants being stressed and as a result producing compounds that are useful to humans. And then this actually is kind of the origin of why I got into nutrition as a psychiatrist and a physician and a scientist about 6 to 8 years ago. And I wanted to answer the question, why is it that it seems that all human nutrition originates from plants? Of course, you know, you can eat animals that eat plants, but it comes down to all nutrition comes from plants. And what the heck? I mean, why is that? Are they like altruists or something? You know, like plants just exist for our health and pleasure. And really, I tried to understand this. I asked many different individuals, read different sources of information, and yeah, I came up with an answer. I have an answer for you. Would you okay, like to hear?
So the answer to the question of why plants are altruistic, is that what you're saying? Because I thought xenohormesis was kind of based on this concept that plants are kind of trying to kill us, and that actually helps us out long term as long as we consume them in an intelligent way, you know, like soaking or sprouting or fermenting and things along those lines.
That was the answer to my quest. Altruistics, they would like to, generally plants would like to kill us. Now there's some, you know, some exceptions of, okay, sure, we eat seeds and we disperse them and so on. But I think they could do without that. At least it probably wouldn't be evolving in that direction had it not been for the existence of some animals. So I don't think it's a big issue. For example, I mean, this is a crazy example, but there are some plants that don't really, that have seeds that don't disperse with animals involved. And I just don't think that that's a major aspect to what they do.
Okay, so backing it up here, what you're saying is that, like, we've been taught in many cases to believe that one of the reasons that plants can damage the digestive tract, you know, let's say like quinoa and the saponins that cover quinoa, you know, like that soap-like irritant, is that it would allow a mammal to eat quinoa and then poop out the quinoa seed somewhere because it wouldn't be digested. The seed wouldn't be digested. What you're saying is that plants have the ability to propagate without the necessity of being pooped out by a mammal, and so that there are other reasons in addition to just passing unscathed through the digestive tract that a plant would have defense mechanisms that could potentially harm or kill a mammal that eats it or an animal that eats it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not appreciated that much of the phytochemical production that plants make is to defend against pathogens. And, I mean, they make fantastic pesticides for bacteria, viruses, funguses, insects, obviously. And for animals, the bitterness, I think, turns a lot of animals off. I mean, a carnivore cannot eat a plant because of bitterness, for example. But those, fortunately, those phytochemicals that are kind of pesticides don't usually kill larger animals, although they can make you sick. And then there's some exceptions where if you eat enough, you can die. But so that's balanced by some phytochemicals that are produced by plants that have health benefits to humans. And these are called phytonutrients. And there are tens of thousands of them. Two big classes are carotenoids. They're fat-soluble, and polyphenols. They're water-soluble. And most of these, or many of these, are used in xenohormosis for plants signaling some kind of stress. So they're like hormones for plants. An example, big example, interesting example, salicylates or salicylates. They fight fungus, viruses, and insect invasion in most all plants. I mean, almost all plants produce an amount larger.
As in like salicylic acid, like what we'd find in, for example, aspirin.
Yeah, that would be a little bit modified version, but absolutely, it's anti-inflammatory in humans. It's that doesn't work that way in the plants. So that's an example that we're all familiar with, is hormesis.
Yeah, and I think that it's really interesting. You talk about specifically in the book when it comes to salicylate production. Cucumbers, how cucumbers, when they get stressed by fungus or they get stressed by viruses, they produce salicylate. And so then when humans consume the cucumber, we actually get benefits in this case against vascular disease. One of the reasons that people might be advised by their physician to say, pop an aspirin. Willow is another thing you bring up. Willow seedlings, like the seedlings of a willow plant, or I suppose it would be a willow tree. Those can get stressed by beetles that would eat the tree. Yeah. And you talk about how in response to that, they produce salicylate. And so if we eat something related to the willow plant or willow seedlings, we would also get benefit for a heart, for vascular disease. And so, you know, I love those examples that you give of xenohormesis. You also talk a little bit about things that go beyond salicylate that a plant would produce. Like you were talking just now, was it carotenoids that you said were another stressor or another bioactive product released in response to a stressor?
Yeah. The carotenoids are very common in most all plants, and as well as polyphenols. But I think the carotenoids and polyphenols, phytonutrients, are generally plant hormones that signal there's something going on that we need to, as a plant, respond to. But the salicylates, for example, are present in every plant. Every plant has this. Now, the willow, the inside of the bark of a willow tree, has a very high concentration. That was the original extract that then was produced into aspirin by Bayer in Germany. They had to give up the name aspirin, though. That was their brand name, but now it's a generic name. So it actually had to make their brand name generic. Mm. I think it was a World War II thing. I'm not sure, but there are other compounds like cumin that has so much salicylates in it that it's almost equivalent to a baby aspirin, 81 milligrams, one teaspoon. And then you don't have the side effects of GI bleeding and, in some cases, death on just a baby aspirin a day.
It would be, when you look at turmeric, in the book you talk about how heat stress, for example, is what would cause turmeric to actually have increased concentration of curcuminoids, which you talk about in the book can help out with things like mood disorders. I've talked on previous podcasts about how curcumin can be really good for helping with brain inflammation or helping with blood-brain barrier leakage and some other components that are related to mental health, of course, too. But it's interesting how when you stress the plant, you know, in this case, turmeric, with heat, or you stress it, you know, another example you bring up in the book is nutrient deprivation. You know, ironically, by not taking care of a plant or by almost like abusing a plant or exposing it to environmental stress, it turns around and creates something, you know, in this case, like curcumin, that winds up being a mild hormetic stress to the human body that actually gives us some benefit. You know, what's really interesting about this, Dr. Aiken, that I think is kind of cool is it's really kind of related to the wine industry, too. You know, you even bring up like grapes, you know, how heat or water deprivation can increase concentration of phenolic compounds. And when you go and visit many vineyards these days, a lot of them have these big, luscious, large grapes that actually produce really kind of like sugary wine low in phenolic compounds. I had a podcast a while ago with the folks from Fitvine Wine, and we talk about how they just like beat the hell out of their plants and they water deprive them and they get exposed to heat and they're grown in rocky soil. And the result is a grape that's actually very high in antioxidants and low in sugar and very high in these phenolic compounds, all based on this concept of how when you expose a plant to environmental stress and then eat it, it turns out to be pretty dang good for the human body.
Yeah. No, there's no question that agriculture these days is more centered on flavor, which commonly is associated with sweetness. Like corn's gone through a terrible evolution, and the way that the look, the production, how much you can make in a square, you know, foot of land, and so on. But there's not as much of an interest in the phytonutrient aspect because it's not usually a taste factor, and it doesn't help the economics so much. But I mean, even like you've the hydroponics, for example, plants hate to be grown in this water environment, but it's very nutritious because they hate it. It used to be, you know, that you go in your garden and you love your plants and say nice things to them and, I don't know, play Mozart or something. No, the right way to do it is to, I don't know, go out and scream at them not give them as much water as they like and that kind of thing if you want to maximize their utility to you.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating concept that you get into in the book, and I like the table that you have in the book where you go over other things, you know, like dandelion and how when you expose it to abuse, it can create more phenolic compounds, and how oregano, when it gets infected by bacteria, produces more of the active anti-inflammatory ingredient carvacrol, and how like St. John's wort, when it gets exposed to water deficits, it creates more hyperforin, which is an antidepressant. It's really kind of an interesting table that you have in there. But then you talk about a few other things in this book that I think are interesting. For example, lithium. You know, when I interviewed Kevin Rose on a podcast a few weeks ago, we talked about lithium as kind of like being one of the new darlings of the nootropic industry, or the smart drug industry is like something that they'd combine, you know, like lithium combined or bound to a mineral or a salt. I think in this case it was orothate that we were talking about, how it was bound with. Or how they used to use it in 7-Up as a nootropic. But you also discuss lithium in your book as one of the things that you consider to be an essential component of plant foods. Can you talk a little bit about lithium and why it is that you like it so much and how we can get more of it in our diet?
You bet. So I did listen to that podcast, as I do most of your podcasts. And he discusses Dr. Greenblatt's book on nutritional lithium. I forgot the title, but it's something like the Cinderella drug, meaning that it's really important, but nobody likes it or nobody gives it attention. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of such compounds. But his first chapter in Dr. Greenblatt's book is nutritional psychiatry, which is sort of like what I call neurodietetics. And wow, lithium is crazy stuff. I mean, I remember playing with it in the chemical lab when I was in college, and as a metal. And man, you put this in the air, it starts on fire. You put it into water, it explodes in small amounts. It's, of course, the problem behind Samsung's Note 7 that, you know, you can't take on board an aircraft. And I'm surprised there's not more difficulties with both lithium-ion batteries generally. But just an aside, lithium chloride used to be used as a substitute for sodium chloride. So you would take home a salt shaker full of lithium chloride because it doesn't increase your blood pressure. Unfortunately, it would, you know, become toxic and sick, and has a very narrow therapeutic index. So you can be nauseated, vomiting, have tremors, dizzy, diarrhea. In psychiatry, we use concentrations between 600 and 18 milligrams per day. It's a fantastic medication. It actually was first used in the United States at Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, Washington University, where I did my training and residency and fellowship and child fellowship. And it's for mania, it was a miracle. It's also
for me. Now, what is mania exactly?
Yeah, mania is, you've heard of manic depression or bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the throes of mania, in which you're, you know, making decisions that are not in your best interest and kind of acting pretty crazy. And you know, there's degrees of it, but, bipolar type one is just a wildly, terrible state of being, and you hear and see things and give all your money away.
In a situation like that, what would be a typical pharmacologic dose of lithium? I'm just trying to wrap my head around like what they'd use in psychiatry versus what we'd find in plants.
Right. Between 600 and 1800 milligrams, in a day. And, so to compare that with, what you find commonly in lithium waters, like, in some communities, they have their water supply is tied into kind of some deep, spring, runoff. And that's about 2 milligrams per liter. So, you know, if you drink a couple liters of water, you get 4 or 5 milligrams a day of lithium, and that I speculate was very common thousands of years ago, in which lithium was more available. It wasn't buried so deeply or washed into our oceans. In fact, if you look in deep waters of the ocean, the mineral contents are way beyond on the surface, including lithium. But it's a fantastic medication in psychiatry. It's the only psychotropic, or one of the only psychotropic medications used in psychiatry that doesn't have what's called a black box warning, which is kind of synonymous with danger of death. And the danger of death is typically for secondary to suicide or suicidal thinking. This is anti-suicidal. So oftentimes it's used together with antidepressants as an adjunctive medication to kind of reduce the likelihood of suicidal thinking.
Gotcha. But it has like more of a nootropic or like a neuroprotective effect when used in smaller quantities, right? And I mean like for example, let me put it this way. I stayed up late reading. That's my son and I are very much alike. When I was a kid, I used to stay up till about 2 or 3 a.m. reading books, and last night my 8-year-old son Taryn read until about midnight, and I also was up also just reading underneath the red lamp with my blue light blocking glasses on, but nonetheless up reading last night. And so this morning, because I only slept about 5 or 6 hours, I took what I call the God pill, you know, which is like this smart drug that I use called Qualia, and it has about 50 milligrams of lithium orotate in it. And, you know, that's to help with cognitive function when I'm a little bit low on sleep. And so in this case, from what I understand, there's some neuroprotective abilities and improvements in mood and also cognitive function. And what you're saying is that we actually find lithium as well in plant-derived foods and drinking water?
Yeah, it depends on your community and your soil. I mean, it's the mineral content, particularly these trace minerals, just vary tremendously from location to location in the soil. And in drinking water, same deal. Some communities that have, I think this was mentioned on your other podcast, that some communities that have, you know, on the order of a daily intake of 3 milligrams a day of lithium, those populations tend to have less suicide and violent crimes and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm totally interested also as a psychiatrist in these trace levels of lithium, and I'm trying to understand it. Apparently, it's neuroprotective or cognitive decline like Alzheimer's and improvements in mood, cognitive function, irritability, kind of minor tendencies toward mood disorders, not a major. And I would say also, I'm familiar a little bit with the God pill. I may have some things to say. I have a God smoothie.
really? Is this kind of like your super smoothie? Because I want to ask you about your super smoothie that you go into in the book. Okay,
yeah.
I'm gonna save that question for a little bit later. But just really quickly, correct me if I'm wrong, but because we find lithium in many cases in mineral rich water. You know, I'm a big fan of shellfish. I know you eat more of a plant-based diet, but I know lithium can be concentrated in things like shrimp and lobster and crustaceans and mollusks and things like that. But, can you also find it in sea vegetables like, you know, kelp or phytoplankton or algae or things of that nature?
You know, I can't tell you numbers, but, I would speculate yes, because, in the sea, particularly the deep sea, there's a higher concentration of lithium and in all, as I understand it, all animals require lithium. It's not like we used to joke that, oh, a patient is lithium deficient or is thorazine deficient or, you know. But it's actually true that you must have a certain amount of lithium. I don't believe it's clear exactly why and how it's used. And in plants, it's even more misunderstood of why in the heck plants need lithium, but they tend to, if it's available, they tend to bring it up into the plant.
Interesting. Now, are there any other compounds that you derive from plants that you eat or supplements that you take that you would recommend, you know, while we're on this topic of nootropics or mental performance, that you would recommend specifically for the brain, for the mind, or to improve mood?
Yeah, and to kind of tie in complete a conversation about lithium, there are lots. I have a theory. I have the theory that I haven't really verified in the literature, but I think that there are a lot of mineral insufficiencies. I'm not a supplement guy so much, nor am I. I like to think of whole foods and not you know, extracts. But I think something has happened over the millennia of glacier movements and soil erosion and so a lot of minerals like lithium, but also zinc, which is very much important in brain health, selenium, important in immune function. You just can't get selenium very easily. It's in Brazil nuts, garlic, onions, and things. And iodine, the iodine deficiency is the most common cause of preventable brain damage in the world, and there's a problem with it. Putting iodine in salt is a great idea, but people who don't want to use additional salt for blood pressure reasons, it's a problem. But and in talking about foods that I recommend for mental performance. By the way, I was listening to the intro to your show, and you mentioned that your podcast is to help to increase physical and mental performance of your listeners. And
right.
I'm totally there. I mean, that's what this book is all about, flourishing from a cognitive, emotional, and behavioral standpoint. And you don't have to be depressed or mentally ill. I mean, there's a whole spectrum of degrees of cognitive, emotional, and behavioral excellence related to this concept of eudaimonia. But anyway, getting back to specifics on foods, as a physician, gotta make a statement. Talk with your physician before self-treating and testing stuff.
But, yeah, but before taking in boatloads of lithium, talk to your doc.
So I have this stuff in the pantry that my wife seems to be addicted to. It's this powder. She found it there. It must have arrived when I was gone traveling, and she's now been using it to sleep. And then I started using it to sleep and to relax, even to nap. It's L-theanine, GABA, and over 70 trace minerals, along with a special form of chelated magnesium called magnesium threonate, which is the only form of magnesium known to penetrate the blood-brain barrier. And the name of this stuff is called Mello, M-E-L-L-O. It's made by Ned. And when I picked up the bag, I thought it was just magnesium. I didn't understand why my wife was flipping out about how amazing it was. Then I looked at the label and I was like, oh, this is way better than magnesium. Three forms of chelated magnesium, actually. GABA, L-theanine, amino acids, and over 70 trace minerals. Over 5,000 five-star reviews. They share all their third-party lab reports, so the stuff is clean. And you get 15% off anything from Ned, N-E-D, Ned. So you can become the best version of yourself. Go to helloned.com/greenfield or enter code greenfield at checkout. That's helloned.com/greenfield to get 15% off. All right, folks, you may have heard the recent podcast episode I recorded with this cat who designed a drink. His name is Zach Abbott. He designed a drink that you throw back, it's a little shot, and it digests the toxic byproducts of alcohol for you, meaning that you feel great the next day after you've been drinking. And while I only endorse holiday responsible drinking and responsible drinking in general, it is nice to know you can maybe sneak in an extra cocktail or a glass of wine just because that holiday party is so freaking long. And there's nothing to do but drink. So you throw back a shot of this stuff and it basically digests acetaldehyde for you, which is the chemical unwanted byproduct of alcohol. And so what they've done is they've bioengineered this probiotic to do that for you. And it works amazingly. You feel great the next day. It's very, very simple. You get a box of this stuff. You throw back a shot of it before you drink. Or if you forget, sometimes people are forgetful and you remember halfway through the party, you just throw it back then. And here's the deal. They've got steep discounts going on. You go to ZBiotics, called ZBiotics, if you're in Europe, ZBiotics.com/Ben, ZBiotics.com/Ben. You get 15% off your first order when you use code Ben at checkout, 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason because you had 8 glasses of wine and you woke up the next morning and you weren't feeling that great, they'll refund your money. No questions asked, but please don't have 8 glasses of wine. So you go to zbiotics.com/Ben, use code Ben at checkout for 15% off. You got to try this stuff. Everybody I've told about ZBiotics, they have literally come back and said, dude, I had no clue. I was skeptical at first. I was skeptical myself, but it actually works. Very interesting. So zbiotics.com/Ben. All right, folks. Well, cold turkey might be great on sandwiches, but there's a better way to break a bad habit than quitting that bad habit, cold turkey. I'm not talking about some weird mind voodoo from your crazy neighbor standing on a nail bed or something like that. I'm talking about this thing called Fume. This little thing called Fume holds a hallowed place in my fanny pack, actually. I've been hitting up the maple pepper core in that thing quite a bit. So anyways, the Fume is not a vape. It's a flavored air device. You breathe natural flavors through it, Like I said, I got the maple peppercorn loaded up in mine right now. Turns out black pepper really hits the spot, so I can feel satisfied without breathing in or chewing on anything bad. It's amazing. I've got another one called the crisp mint core, so I can breathe in mint-flavored air rather than a pen infused with something else. You know what I mean? That kind of bad habit that isn't good for you. Instead, you just basically use this pen, and it is an essential oil pen. It's amazing. A flavored air device. You get the taste sensation and the fidget and that hand-to-mouth action, but you don't have to feel guilty about the habit. It's a good habit to have. They have a whole bunch of natural, delicious flavors. It's not a vape. Don't get me wrong. It's a natural air device. It's fully legal. It doesn't have anything bad in it. I even use it on an airplane. I get a few funny looks with people who think I'm vaping on an airplane, even though I'm not. It's just basically flavored air, and it tastes great. I found it made my cravings go out the window. It's weird. It's a crazy life hack, but it works, and it's super sexy and cool looking too. So it's called Fume, F-U-M. You can get 10% off this thing if you go to tryfume.com, tryfume.com, use code BEN to save 10%. So you can accelerate humanity's breakup from destructive habits by picking up what's called their Journey Pack today. It has a whole bunch of cool flavors, including that crisp mint core and the maple pepper core, two of my favorites. So again, tryfume.com/BEN and use code BEN to save 10% off your order from Fume, F-U-M.
So you mentioned selenium, iodine. You know, I know a lot of those are also important for, thyroid as well. You also you talk about L-theanine quite a bit in the book as you know, one of the things that one can use to, say, increase alpha brainwave production, and it also has some pretty cool neuroprotective properties. And I noted that you have this little kind of, I guess you could call it a biohack in a way, this green tea workout drink that you make. You call it your hibiscus and green tea workout drink. I know it's got, because of the green tea, some pretty concentrated sources of L-theanine. But can you walk me through the recipe for your hibiscus and green tea workout drink and why you chose the specific ingredients that you did? And you even get into, in the book, how you soften the cell walls and increase the solubility of the cellular content. So I was wondering if you could get into the nitty-gritty details of your hibiscus and green tea workout drink, because I find this one fascinating.
Yes, I surely will. I hope I can get to my favorite number one food, whole food, little performance, and that's flaxseed and omega-3. But this drink I use all the time, and I really like and I recommend it. First of all, of course, it's based on two main ingredients, well, three: water, green tea, and hibiscus flowers. The green tea is the most consumed beverage in the world because it's psychoactive. I mean, it's a it's legal, but wow, it has some great stuff in it. Green tea is a natural state of the plant. Black tea is more oxidized and less useful. It's the popular one in the United States. It's got caffeine, obviously, but that stimulating effect of caffeine is modulated by this L-theanine. And so the idea is to be kind of focused, but without being, you know, nervous and anxious.
Right, and it can take some of the edge off of the caffeine.
Bruce Lee, the less effort, the faster and more powerful you will be. that's kind of the idea behind this. But theanine, it crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is, you know, tremendous. Not all compounds do that. It's anxiolytic, has calming effect, increases neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine. It increases alpha waves, being fully present, being in the moment, power of now, meditation. And it's great for depression and mood, too. So it has those features. Also in green tea is polyphenols, rich in polyphenols that, in fact, it's got like 30% of the dry weight is polyphenols. So it's really high in polyphenols. So for intense physical exercise that produces oxidative stress, it's really fantastic. Now, this effect may not happen during the time in which you're exercising, depending upon the length of the exercise. If it's often hours and hours long, then it may, but certainly afterward. Hibiscus, again, loaded with polyphenols, significant flavonoids, antioxidant effects. But the reason when I use it is that There's an endothelium-dependent relaxation effect that I think is from nitric oxide production and decrease of blood viscosity. So so here's you make tea the old way. You put some water on the stove, take some tea bags out, and you dump the tea bags into the cup, and you solubilize the polyphenols, which are water soluble, and the temperature helps to soften the cell walls and increase the solubility and bring out the. And it takes about 5 minutes.
Okay, so basically, the first thing that you're doing is you're taking your hibiscus flowers, and then your green tea leaves, or can you just use hibiscus tea bags and green tea bags and steep those and prepare them as you would normally prepare tea? Is that like the first step?
You certainly could. You certainly could.
Okay.
But I don't do that. I'm a blender guy.
Okay.
And so I biohack this this idea of making tea. And so what I do, don't use bags, tea bags. I get in bulk, much, much cheaper. I buy like a pound or two of green tea leaves and a pound or two of hibiscus leaves, and put and put a couple of teaspoons of both right into the blender. And what happens is I can make this very quickly because at high speeds you can break down the size of the particles of the tea below 100 microns, actually blasting the cell walls as well as the organelles. So,
and that will assist with the actual absorption to get the size of these particles below 100 microns.
Right. So you can, it's more easily to faster to transfer the polyphenols into solution because of the agitation effect and the fact that you have blasted the cell walls apart. And so,
So you're not even making them into tea. You're not even steeping them in hot water. You found that you can reduce that. So instead of steeping for 5 minutes, you're just taking the bulk raw dried hibiscus flowers and then your green tea leaves, and you're simply blending those like 30 seconds using like a high speed blender.
Right.
Okay.
The thing is kind of the negative is that you do get a kind of a slush. So you do need to take I put this into about a in my blender maybe 50 ounces capacity of the solution. So it's about three of these the typical size workout drink bottles.
Okay.
But you have to strain it. You have to strain it because I don't want it to be sucking on these bottles with particulates in it. You know, I want it to be like tea. I mean, just kind of clear. So you have to strain it. You know, big deal. Doesn't take long. I usually make three of these for three different workout days.
Okay.
So
now you're obviously not just blending this into some powder. You add liquids after you blend the tea leaves and the hibiscus leaves, don't you?
You have tea as a result, but you do throw out some of the goodies. I mean, there's still some fiber and probably not 100% polyphenol extraction, but I mean, a whole lot more than a tea bag in hot water.
Okay, gotcha. Now,
In
the article that you wrote that I featured on the site a couple of years ago, you talked about how you found when you did that banana experiment that you could help to protect the antioxidants in some of these compounds when you blend them. And one of the things you talked about was the addition of like citric acid, like something that was rich in vitamin C, like lemon juice or lime juice. Are you using that in your smoothie as well? And the main reason I ask is ever since I interviewed you and you talked about that, the first thing that I do when I'm making my green smoothie in the morning is I add ice to reduce the temperature. So that goes in the bottom of the blender. And then I squeeze half a lemon over the ice. So I get the citric acid in the antioxidants to protect some of the components from getting oxidized when I blend at those high speeds. Are you doing that when you make this workout drink?
Absolutely. I mean, every time I blend anything, I begin that way. And I usually just put the either the whole lemon or the whole lime into the blender with water or ice, and then I blend that at high speed before I start anything. And that, just to review what that does, is this ascorbic acid decreases the reaction between polyphenol oxidase and polyphenol, so it doesn't allow the oxygen, which is coming in at tornado speeds, to oxidize the antioxidants, which would be a pretty bad thing. So if you do that step first, you can reduce tremendously that reaction. It still happens, but at a lower rate. And you got a few hours before there's significant oxidation, depending upon how much citric acid, ascorbic acid you put in there.
Okay, cool. Well, I know you've got the whole recipe in your book, but it's just basically the hibiscus, the green tea, and then you blend that up with some kind of ascorbic acid, like lemon or lime juice. You add ice, and after you've blended that, then you just basically strain it to get all the grit from the leaves and stuff out, and you fill water bottles with that.
Yeah, it's one of the few cases in which I will remove any of the whole food. But again, it's for, you're on your bike and you don't want to be choking on fibrous material or it's clogging your water bottle. So,
right.
And polyphenols at this kind of a technique, really gets into solution. I don't know the percentage, but I'm betting a large percentage of the polyphenols are available for you there.
Okay, cool. I like it. Now, one of the other things that you mentioned that I want to make sure I give you a chance to talk about before we delve into your super smoothie recipe, or I think what you called your God smoothie recipe, you mentioned one other specific whole food that you like for mental performance that I didn't give you a chance to talk about much, and that was, I believe you said, like a flaxseed, or was it a flaxseed powder or flaxseed oil or flaxseeds, or what was it about flaxseeds that you mentioned?
Right. I appreciate that. Because this is definitely my kind of go-to food. If I had to recommend, go to a desert island, take one food, I guess it probably would be actually green leaves plants. But it's pretty fantastic. And in fact, I gave a presentation at the Southern California Veg Fest in November, in which I handed out flax seeds to everyone. You can get the flax seeds in these little packets of 2 tablespoons worth that are already ground and protected from oxygen, and it's pretty cool. Well, so here's my thoughts on flax seeds. First of all, it's got so many goodies in it. It's got, obviously, it's got the omega-3s, which I want to mention a few things about, which is so important. Omega-3 is pretty close to an antidepressant, but flaxseeds also are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, which is related to their effect on depression. Soluble fiber, it's antihypertensive, but it's this omega-3 that I'm so interested in. It's, of course,
a quick question about omega-3s, because I know that DHA is, of course, the long-chain fatty acid that can be made from ALA, which you find in flaxseed, and that's manufactured by all plants. You know, it's a short-chain omega-3 fatty acid that eventually winds up becoming a long-chain fatty acid in the body. But is DHA synthesis from an alpha-linolenic acid, like an ALA, source, such as flaxseed, compared to a direct, or a more concentrated DHA source, like, let's say, fish, is that sufficient, or have they shown that there is a sufficient supply in that to supply the adult brain with DHA, wow. or I suppose a children's brand DHA. That's one thing that I've found, kind of the research seems to go back and forth on, and I'm curious to hear your perspective on that, ALA conversion to DHA and the amount to which that occurs and whether we get enough from something like, you know, say flaxseed or a plant-based source.
Yeah, well, this was has been very confusing to me. Just a couple of years ago, there were some studies that sort of summarized some other studies and contributed additional information about this. And it looks to me like the research would indicate there's no question that you can make sufficient EPA and DHA from ALA in a certain diet that has enough of the ALA, which I think is about this data comes from the National Academy of Sciences, but I'm not sure it's correct. 1.6 grams per day for men, 1.1 grams per day for women of ALA is the essential omega-3 that then can make the EPA and DHA. The DHA is made in the liver. DHA is then transported across the blood-brain barrier, and it is the major polyunsaturated fatty acid that the brain uses. So, but if you get your ALA, you're home good. And so, but why do that? Why not just eat fish? Well, here's the problem as I see it. First of all, wild-caught fish, you have the toxic POPs, persistent organic pollutants, dioxins, pesticides, PCBs, heavy metals, mercury, lead, cadmium, farm-raised, it's low in omega-3s. You don't usually have algae, which the omega-3s come from. Fish don't eat that, so you don't have it in farm-raised. These, a lot of times you don't know if you're eating farm-raised or wild-caught. Research, at least from my standpoint, for cognitive emotional health does not indicate that increasing your fish in your diet has a very strong relation to improvement in mood. And these were studies done in Japan where the highest consumption of a certain type of fish. Okay, then what about fish oil supplements? Well, my understanding is that the omega-3s in fish oil supplements are rather unstable, and they decompose, and they actually unleash free radicals. So it's a little problematic getting omega-3 from fish sources, wild-caught, farm-raised, or fish oil. What about flax seeds then? One tablespoon, and you're good to go. But this brings up a bigger question, Ben.
Is that one tablespoon ground, or is that one tablespoon whole?
It's ground, and okay. That's a problem because you can't eat whole flax seeds. They just kind of go through. They're really hard, and you'll chew some, but I put them either in my coffee grinder, or I just throw in my high-speed Vitamix every morning. And I use these little packets. I can put it on salads and oatmeal in the morning, and it's kind of nutty. It doesn't taste bad.
I think it's interesting because this debate does go back and forth. I delved into the research a little bit, and some of the more relevant and recent research you highlight in the book. A particularly interesting study called "Is Docehexaenoic Acid Synthesis from Alpha-Linolenic Acid Sufficient to Supply the Adult Brain?" This appeared in the Progress in Lipid Research Journal. I actually went through and I read that entire study, and I found it pretty interesting in that they found that concentrations of DHA in the human adult brain were similar when you compared DHA intake and ALA intake. I was having a hard time wrapping my head around the total quantity that they used in this study of alpha-linolenic acid, but you're saying it's close to the equivalent of about 1 to 2 tablespoons of like a ground flaxseed source?
Yes.
Okay. What I'm going to do, if people want to delve into that study, because I know plenty of folks want to kind of read the research. I know we have lots of nerdy listeners. I'll link to that study in the show notes if you want to dive in and take a look at that, because I found it fascinating. And one thing I should throw out there is that, and I don't know how you feel about this, Dr. Akin, but in the same way that fish oil, you know, if you consume like rancid, heated, oxidized fish oil, which of it is. Yeah. You could make the same error with seed oils too, you know, like heated oils, oxidized seed oils. So you'd want to be careful with your flax in the same way that you'd want to be careful with your fish oil. I actually threw out an entire bottle about a $60 bottle of fish oil last night because it was a fermented cod liver oil, and it was in the refrigerator on the lower shelf, which is where my children's supplements are, and they've been taking a fermented cod liver oil. But I noted that the cap had come off, and it had been for the few days I was out of town getting exposed to light and heat and oxidation. And as much as it pained me to do it, I threw it out because I know taking a bad rancid oxidized fish oil is worse for you than you know not taking fish oil at all. So I tossed it and told my kids next time, make sure you keep the fish oil cold and keep the lid on it. But I'll link to this article in the show notes. I know we've been going for a little while, and I really, really want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about your super smoothie recipe, because I know you're a real smoothie guy, man after my own heart. I know we've had a little bit of a buildup to this, but can you go into your super smoothie recipe?
I'll kind of make some highlights on this. You're right. I'm a smoothie guy. And, when I make smoothies, first of all, I'm making them for maximum health. It's like, you know, I don't call them God smoothies, but, it's kind of like that. I mean, our set of pills, have so much stuff in them. It's kind of like shotgun. Maybe some of them will hit, you know, and do something good. And there's some danger in that too, because you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, we didn't like have 25 different ingredients in one swallow. But nevertheless, I agree with the experimentation, as long as you're not obviously putting any toxic food in as one of the elements. But so what I do on my smoothies, most every morning, not every morning, but most every morning, is I first of all, I get stuff from the fridge that is beginning to get old and doesn't look good and maybe doesn't taste quite as good, because I can put into my smoothie and I can camouflage it.
You're not talking about fungus and mold. You're just talking about maybe the parsley that might be close to getting to turn, but is not yet smelly.
Yeah, the tomatoes that are kind of mealy.
I'm kind of the same way. I'm almost like the garbage compactor when it comes to the smoothies. I rummage through the fridge for all the stuff that probably isn't going to last much longer.
Yeah. I prepare sometimes about 12 of these. In advance, 12 of these smoothie, and put them in a evacuated bag, and then put them in the freezer. But typically, I'll begin with the lemon or lime, quarter it, but put the whole thing, rind and everything, in with ice, and start that, and get that all ready, and then I'll put in my green leafy vegetables. It's one of the most important ingredients for me, and it's hard to get down leafy vegetables. They're just bitter. I don't like them personally. In fact, my smoothie, I don't really care what it tastes like. I'm just going to, if it tastes bad, it's like, wow, this must be good for me, you know, like medicine.
You know what, that's why I keep a tiny little bottle of organic butterscotch stevia and organic vanilla stevia in my fridge. I use this company called Omica Organics, and I've found that with a little bit of sea salt and a little bit of stevia, I can turn just about any failed smoothie experiment into a tasty little surprise. That's my hack.
Well, I know if my wife or someone else is going to, you know, want to sample this or have it for breakfast, then yeah, I'll pay more attention to that. Usually just adding dates are fantastic, but very high in sugar.
That's why I use the stevia.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough. And then I usually have, as backup, I've got bags of organic broccoli, cruciferous vegetables, carrots, zucchini, and always berries of various types, red, dark, dark-colored and various colored berries. Always put that in to the mixture. Always my little heaping tablespoon of flaxseed, maybe two. I put usually turmeric and a couple pinches of the ground pepper to make the bioavailability better.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm a huge fan of that. And you'd be surprised when you add turmeric and black pepper. Not only are you making anything that you've added to that smoothie more bioavailable, but you'd be surprised. Turmeric and black pepper don't taste that bad, even in like a morning. So you'd think it'd almost be too savory, too much like visiting an Indian or a Thai restaurant for a morning smoothie. But I find I barely taste, I've been adding both turmeric and black pepper to a morning smoothie just to get the most out of all those goodies I'm putting into the smoothie jar. And it doesn't really seem to affect the flavor deleteriously at all.
Yeah. This is where actual, I think, recipes can come in handy. If you go over the line a little bit too much with one or two ingredients, then it can affect the flavor adversely or positively. But I don't care. I just want to make this thing a God smoothie. And mm-hmm. This is where the God smoothie comes in. I have in the glass jars lined up, a dozen glass jars full of stuff I know that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I have some reason for it, and I've written each one in the book. Some are a recovery type of antioxidants. Some are good from various standpoints. I do this. I try to work out every morning, and this is my kind of post-workout drink too. But then I have this biohack that I do all day of, rather than flooding yourself with goodness, I'll take some pretty good swallows, and then during the day, I will take a swallow between patients, and just kind of like have a long-acting, nutritious meal throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
So my system can knows what to do.
Now that is actually something that I don't do, and the reason for that is, and there's actually a pretty recent article about this, how circadian rhythms tend to be optimized, and I'll put a link to this one in the show notes. By the way, the show notes, everybody, it's at bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. This study that recently came out in 2017, actually, about time-restricted feeding and about eliminating like frequent fluctuations in blood sugar or constantly kind of like getting little snacks in here and there, it goes into how that tends to sustain what they call in the study a robust circadian clock, which may prevent chronic disease and some characteristics of aging. Basically, what they found was a better timed circadian rhythm in people who ate right around in the range of 2 to 3 meals per day versus like erratic eating patterns or grazing or snacking. And what I've tended to do based on that research is I have all my smoothie at once in the morning is like this big cue to my body, this big circadian rhythm cue to my body in the morning. And then mostly I've just been sipping teas and non-calorie based foods where I'm still getting antioxidants and some other components into my body, but not actual calories. Based on this research and some previous research I've seen in terms of time-restricted feeding and avoiding specifically fluctuations in blood sugar. So I get where you're coming from with that, kind of like sipping it throughout the day. Especially when you're busy and you have patients, et cetera. But I've adopted an opposite approach. I've actually gotten on this bandwagon where I'm just like eating anywhere from 2 to 3 times a day and spending very long periods of time in between meals.
Well, I want to read that. It's something that I really haven't put into the equation, and it would be nice to not have to drag around a baby bottle cooler all day, which I do with my smoothie. But the other thing that to take into consideration, though, is I used to kind of like these, particularly the bad tasting smoothies, you know, bitter and what have you. I'd slam them. I mean, I just like chuck them, and I got to understand that no, you kind of want to sip and swirl.
Oh yeah, I eat mine with a spoon. I eat my smoothie with a spoon and kind of chew it. You know, I chew my liquid. Yeah. So I typically take for that morning smoothie, I take about a half hour, and typically for me, I'm kind of going through some articles and catching up on reading and stuff while I try to avoid stressful activities like email when I'm eating my foods. But I'll read and things like that when I'm doing the morning smoothie. But you reveal in the book, you reveal not only your full smoothie recipe that you just went into, including, of course, the addition of the two most important things I learned from you when I interviewed you earlier was the addition of ascorbic acid and the addition of ice to reduce the oxidation and the increased temperature that can occur when you blend. So all my smoothies now, there's always at least a handful of ice in there. There's always lemon, and that's always at the bottom of the smoothie. People will have to, of course, get your book to see this part because I don't think we have a ton of time to go into it, but you have a really cool recipe for your Buddha bowl in there too. And I have a giant mortar and pestle on my kitchen counter and love your concept of crushing plants with a mortar and pestle. If anybody has not experimented with taking a bunch of seeds and things like, you know, onions and garlic and even, you know, grains, especially grains that you've soaked or grains that you've sprouted, and then just like pounding it to heck in a mortar and pestle, you're missing out on some pretty cool recipes that you can make. And I love some of the ingredients that you're adding to yours, like the flax seeds and the turmeric and the black pepper. So for those of you listening, check that out in the book. But there was one other thing that I wanted to, if you have the time, Dr. Aiken, I wanted to squeeze in. And you were telling me right before we started recording about sleep and this new kind of like sleep, I suppose you could call it a hack, not to overuse this word on today's show, that you were experimenting with. Can you tell me what you've been doing in terms of sleep?
Yeah, so I went out to a floating conference, a continuing medical education conference on women's health, and a bunch of physicians were there. And between the break, we're talking about what's the most, kind of difficult to handle question that your patients give you. And across the board, no matter what your specialty was in medicine, it was patients saying they can't sleep. And I certainly have experienced that. I mean, it seems like, you know, nobody can sleep. And one of the physicians there, a gynecologist, said, well, have you heard of Alteril? Like Alteril, Alteril, Alteril. And I had not. And this is over the counter, but I got some of this Alteril. It's kind of expensive, and it's kind of stinky. The pills are kind of large, but if you can get past that, then I tried this myself personally before I would give it to patients, and I've since given it to patients, and they have had quite some success. But here's what happens. First of all, there's it's kind of a mixture too of nothing like God's pill, but it has the usual L-tryptophan and glycine and melatonin, but it's got like skullcap herb and chamomile herb and passion flower herb and some kind of hop extract.
It sounds like lots of inhibitory neurotransmitter precursors.
Yes. And of course it has my favorite L-theanine. So this is my own experience. You take this, and hour before lights out, I try to kind of get out of my head and meditate and get into the moment and that kind of thing. But what happens is that I start, you know, thoughts come into your head, but rather than thoughts that are, you know, like associated with what you did that day or what you should be doing the next day or something, they're arbitrary thoughts that have nothing to do with anything. They could be shapes and almost visions. And so it's, you're sort of in this hypnagogic state of hallucinations that kind of like a dream wake state, to which is really fascinating. And your drift, you actually, it's what a lot of us experience just before sleep, but it's more prolonged and you can kind of play with it a little bit, but you know you're going to sleep. So it's a sleep hack. It's kind of a mind hack. It's legal. And I mean, I have no reason to believe that this has any negative effect, but for
yeah,
sleep,
I'm looking at the ingredient label. You know, there's only a couple concerns I have. It's got a huge number of, like magnesium stearate and stearic acid and silicone dioxide and FD&C yellow number 5 and some things that would give me like I like the basic ingredients, but all the fillers are kind of, you know what I need to do is I need to send you some of this sleep remedy. It's got a lot of similar things that Dr. Kirk Parsley's sleep remedy. It's basically vitamin D3 and magnesium, tryptophan, 5-HTP, and some pH GABA and microdoses of melatonin. I swear by mixing that with just a couple capsules of CBD or even like a couple pulls on like a CBD vape pen. And it doesn't have some of these binders and fillers that have to be added to these capsules. I'm looking at the ingredients and I like the ingredient list, this Alteril stuff, but I don't know if you've taken a look at the fillers. That's my concern is like anytime I see the yellows and the blues, I'm just like, you know what? I don't care if the tablet looks pretty. You didn't have to add that into it. Like, you know, that's some of my concern, but I tell you what, I'll, after the call, I'll get your address and I'll drop a few packets of this sleep remedy in the mail over to you so you can try it out. But it's called Dr. Kirk Parsley sleep remedy. And man, I freaking swear by that stuff. Even if you wake up at like 3 or 4 AM, you know, you can take it and, you know, sleep till 6 and wake up and not be too drowsy. So this Alteril stuff though is interesting. I wish they produce it with a little bit less of the fillers, but obviously, you know, when you look at the ingredients like L-tryptophan and GABA and valerian and melatonin, you could pretty easily kind of like hack together your own version of this, I guess, using some more like raw organic ingredients. But that's interesting that you found it to be so effective. It's good to know some of the ingredients actually work.
Maybe we can add these ingredients to your ingredients and make a God's sleep hack.
Yeah, you know, I'm working quite a bit on some custom supplement formulations, new formulations for everything from testosterone to sleep to some really unique mixes that I haven't been able to find out there in the supplement industry that I've always wanted to make. And I'm finally pulling on my big boy pants from a business standpoint, so to speak, and going out to raw ingredient and manufacturers and actually, you know, getting some of this stuff put together, you know, rather than I guess heavily promoting other people's products, kind of trying to design my own spin on things. And so yeah, that might very well be the case that quite soon there'll be something coming down the line for sleep. So anyways, though, in the meantime, I think we've given people plenty of brain food, or in this case, a brain diet, and also a little bit of info on this book, Neurodietetics, which is fantastic. So, if you're listening in, I am going to link to, this episode over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. I've taken copious notes. I'll link to Dr. Aiken's book, some of the previous episodes that we've done, and articles from Dr. Aiken that have appeared on my site. Some links to studies that we talked about, like such as circadian rhythms and time-restricted feeding and DHA synthesis from alpha-linoleic acid. Plenty more in there that you can go and have fun with if you're listening in. So again, that's all over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/braindiet. And in the meantime, Dr. Aiken, thanks for coming on the show and sharing all this stuff with us, man. You're a wealth of information, and I love your passion for using food to heal the body and the brain.
Well, you know, I think I can diddle that. I mean, that's what you do, and I think there's something to be said for mental performance as well. It's sports psychology, you know, is important, but sports ecology, not just for energy, but for mind-body synergism is another aspect of sports performance and mental performance. So,
absolutely.
I really appreciate being being on your podcast. I'm a regular listener, and hope to talk with you again soon.
Cool. I hope so as well. Keep doing what you're doing, man. And for those of you listening in, I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Dr. Richard Aiken, the author of Neurodietetics, Food for Flourishing, signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.